Hi, everybody. It's time once again for the Bernier is a Turd podcast. My name is Jason Carrillo, and this is my friend Chris Withers.
Hi, everybody.
You know, Chris.
Jason.
I hate to say it, but I'm feeling a little bit bad today.
Well, yeah, I think you have a right to be as a Canucks fan feeling bad today. We are no longer in the NHL playoffs.
Yeah, but you know, Chris, that's not why I'm feeling bad.
Really?
I'm feeling a little bit, well, a little bit guilty. As you know, we are the Bernier's a Turd podcast. You know, Bernier, Steve Bernier, big lovable piece of French-Canadian turd that he is, he really wasn't even close to being the worst Canuck out there during these playoffs.
No, he wasn't. He was getting in on the forecheck, which is something that can't be said of most of the Canucks forwards. He was banging and crashing like he was supposed to.
And, I mean, he's never had, you know, the hands.
No.
He's never going to be a big scorer
in
this league. But, you know, I just can't, in all good conscience, with all of the players that made bonehead moves, that didn't finish their checks, that gave away the puck on power plays with 30 seconds left in a period.
That let in weak goals that, 30 seconds into the game.
That occasionally would let in the first shot of a big game. I don't know if I can in good conscience call this the Bernier's a Turd podcast any longer.
It was a nice run while it lasted, but I think I agree with you.
So basically, folks, here's what we've got. Is we've got a podcast. I'm Jason Carrillo. I'm your host. This is Chris Withers.
I'm the co-host.
And you know what? Just in good conscience, we can't say Bernier's a Turd anymore.
So let's open it up to you folks.
Here's the deal. Starting with the postmortem of the 2010 NHL Playoff podcast, we are men with no names.
We are adrift in the sea that is the internet without a name.
And frankly, what Chris just said is a crappy name for a podcast. Adrift on the sea that is the internet with no name podcast just doesn't roll off the tongue the way it should. So it's up to you guys. If you can give some comments to the CanucksCorner.com website, what should we name this podcast? Because we're going to be coming back to you for the third and the fourth round of these playoffs. We're going to be coming back to you for free agency signings later on in the summer. We're going to be coming back to you in September for training camp. And in October for an entire season. And gosh darn it, we need a better name. Because Steve Bernier, with those big lashes of his.
Steve Bernier is not a turd.
I'm having difficulty getting that out because I've had a hate on for Steve Bernier for a long time. But gosh darn it, he and Kyle Wellwood were far and away the best players throughout the first and second. Can you believe this? Kyle Wellwood, for two seasons in a row, has been the best player in a Canucks uniform in the second round.
Damn it, I wish he could bring that during the regular season.
You know what? I'm not upset if he doesn't bring that during the regular season. Cup winners have playoff performers. Look at Detroit. Johan Franzen does not have six-point games in the regular season. Thomas Holmstrom is not a regular season player.
Claude Lemieux comes to mind.
Claude Lemieux, as much as you want to hate the guy, Esa Tikkanen, not when he was with the Canucks, mind you, but Esa Tikkanen in an Oilers uniform. Ken Linsman back in his Philly days. These guys were playoff performers. And you need those guys in order to win a cup. You need a gritty, greasy guy who can get in there. And who better to be gritty and greasy than Kyle Wellwood?
I can think of a few, but is there any guy who looks less like a gritty, greasy hockey player
look at
than
the
Kyle
goals.
Wellwood.
Look at the goals this guy scored in the playoffs.
Yeah.
These were not dangling, pretty moves. He was dirty. He was greasy. He was, you know, standing in the crease with a hawk draped all over him, putting the puck in the net.
Yeah.
So, I mean, really, Kyle Wellwood and Steve Bernier were by far the best Canucks in the second round. Bernier, probably, other than Michael Samuelson, the top Canuck in the first round. So, Bernier's a turd is no longer. We need a new name, folks. Help us out.
Moving on, Vancouver Canucks have lost for the second straight year on the same day, 4-2.
365 days later, the Canucks once again are taken out of the second round of the NHL playoffs by the same team, the Chicago Blackhawks, the dirty, rotten, stinking, mullet-wearing, ugly, Bufflin playing Blackhawks.
Yeah.
The Blackhawks move on to the Western Conference Final against the San Jose Sharks.
Good series.
It's going to be a good series. The Sharks have all the size. The Blackhawks have all the speed.
And the heart.
Maybe the heart. Although, at United Center, the Hawks kind of stank against Vancouver.
Yeah, they did. What did they... They only won one game at home.
Three games at United Center, and the Canucks won two of them. Should have won the third one. I mean, okay, let's break this down. 2 years running, the Canucks take a 1-0 lead in the series.
Yeah.
Right? First of all, I'd like to say, game one of the 2009 playoffs is the only home win by a Vancouver team in a second round series against the Hawks. They have gone at GM Place 1-5 against Chicago. In those six games, Chicago has outscored the Canucks 30-17.
That is disgusting.
30 goals against in six games in their own barn. Now, mind you, even though they lost both series, they were even in Chicago. Chicago, tough arena to play in.
Yeah, I mean, they're the biggest, right? They're probably the loudest just by virtue of packing an extra 5,000 fans into their building every night.
And yet, both of the wins that the Canucks got this year were in Chicago.
Yeah.
And they were impressive. They outscored Chicago 10-2 in those two games.
Yes, they look absolutely unbelievable.
Even in that second game in Chicago, they're up 1-0 in the series. They come out in the first 6 minutes of the game. They had a 2-0 lead.
Yeah.
They looked amazing.
Bieksa hit a post that could have made it 3-0.
Could have made it 3-0.
Behind Niemi that could have made it 4-0.
They blew it.
Yeah.
And this is not altogether different from last year, Chris. Last year, they won the first game at GM Place. It was a different kind of win. They won 5-3, but they almost lost it. They were up 3-0 at home. Crowds going absolutely bonkers. Chicago came back and tied it.
Yeah. They showed this year that they can play with the Hawks. They played games one and game five like they were Stanley Cup contenders.
And in both of those games, despite their injuries and despite their owies they were playing with, I'm talking Ryan Kessler's shoulder, I'm talking Michael Samuelson's back and groin and earlobe and whatever else.
Yeah.
I'm talking about Alexander Burrow's ego. Whatever's wrong with Burrow's, I don't know. But despite all of those things, they intimidated the Hawks. The Hawks looked confused. They looked scared. The Canucks, if they played that way, win the series.
Yeah, and they didn't.
And they didn't play that way for most of the games. In Vancouver, they lost. This year, they lost 5-2 on their home ice. They lost 7-4 on their home ice. And in the final game, do or die game in front of their own fans, they lost 5-1.
Back against the wall, and what can I say? They took the blindfold from the executioner, put it on themselves.
They really
with their own last cigarette and just stood there while the Chicago Blackhawks
now give the Hawks fired. Give the Hawks full credit. These guys looked like they were getting faster and faster as Game 6 wore on. They didn't show up for Game 5, but they sure as hell showed up for Game 6.
Yeah.
The Canucks just didn't.
No.
Unfortunately, although Luongo looked very good in the first period, the same way he looked really good in the first period in Game 5, he didn't show up for the second.
No, fell right off. And never got his form back.
I mean, the first goal was not a bad one. Troy Brouwer tipped in a pass over the glove. It was a really nice play.
Yeah.
Quick play, deflection, very quick. It wasn't even a one-timer. I mean, he just redirected the slap pass.
Yeah.
But it was
exceptional goal.
It was a great goal,
yeah,
by a good team. Now, bring in the goalie that makes the big save to keep the Canucks close. No. Luongo loses his post.
Yes. Yeah. You could see it on the shot that they showed from behind the net at the top of the glass. He was caught leaning.
Way out of position.
He expected him to deke or something.
Yeah. I mean, he expected a deke, and you could see him getting ready to poke check, but he lowered his shoulder, totally lost that post. Boom, the puck goes top corner.
And he did that, I think it was against the same player earlier in the series.
Boland.
Was it Boland?
Wasn't it Boland
who
scored the second goal?
I think it might have been. He, earlier in the series, let in an uncontested deke. I've never seen that before from Luongo. He just froze, was down on his knees, and didn't even fall to his right to try and make a save.
Yeah, it looked a little bit like a soccer goalie on a penalty shot when the goalie decides to stay in the middle of the net.
Yes.
And, you know, you want your goalie to dive one way or the other. If he stands in the middle looking for that shot through the middle of the net and it goes in the corner, he looks like an idiot.
Yeah. And then the second goal, he was caught leaning to his left and the shot went
To the right. And I'm sorry, but you're going to have to look at CanucksCorner.com for my argument on this. I really think that it's in exactly those kinds of situations that the big C needs to be on a different player's chest. Because every once in a while, a goalie, by their very nature, is going to let in a bad goal.
Yes.
That cannot be your captain slumping and putting his head against the ice.
And Luongo, throughout his career, has been somewhat enigmatic. He's got to be focused. You know, you don't want to disrupt him pregame. You don't want him dealing with a media scrum. That's the job of the captain.
We saw that in Game 5, where he ditched the media scrum, he shaved his playoff beard, basically flipped the bird to the media, said, no way, I'm going to concentrate on stopping the puck. And he did that. And he intimidated the Hawks shooters. And they didn't know what to do. In Game 6, it started that way. And for some reason, for whatever reason, I don't know why, he just lost it in the second period.
Yeah.
He lost the swagger. He had it for all of 4 periods. And maybe it was the pressure of the home crowd and the pressure of the captaincy together. The fact is that the Canucks have not performed on home ice in the playoffs for 2 seasons.
Yeah.
And that is something that Mike Gillis needs to address.
How do you address something like that?
I don't know if it's a team psychologist that needs to be brought in. I don't know if Tony Robbins is busy. I don't know if it's a matter of playing Chelsea Dagger after the other team scores so they think they're in Chicago. Honestly, I don't know what it is, but something has got to happen. Just like Pavel Dimitra played lights out in the same building, played lights out when he had a Slovakia jersey on, and he stunk the place up every time he wore a Canucks jersey.
Yeah.
He's played maybe 3 good games this year in Canucks.
Here's a fun statistic for all of you. Pavel Dimitra made $800,000 per goal this season. 800 grand.
Now, is that including playoff goals?
3 goals in the regular season, 2 goals in the playoffs, 5 goals, $4 million.
Okay, can we somehow add the fact that he is directly responsible for at least 3 goals against because of bonehead plays as the guy on the power play? Shorties, there were 3 shorthanded goals scored against the Canucks that were a direct result of his bad decisions on the point and bad ability to skate with that forward back towards his own net.
Okay, are you counting the one last night as well?
I'm certainly counting the one. That was the back-breaking goal. It was 2-0 for Chicago last night. There was less than a minute left in the second period. The Canucks had a power play. They had an opportunity and all the momentum to score a goal and get back in the game.
And Roberto Luongo let in a soft goal. That was a very soft goal.
Now, you know what? Here's where I'll disagree with you, Chris. I don't think any goal on a breakaway is a soft goal. I think that there's just so much going on when you get a breakaway coming in that any goal on a breakaway is a legitimate goal.
I'm going to disagree with you. It's not like the guy made a great move. It's not like Dimitra really played that bad once he had given up the puck. He skated with him. He harried him. There was only one thing that he could have done. He did it, and Luongo let it through his legs.
I totally disagree. There are so many options for a shooter coming in on a clean breakaway from his own blue line. And you've also got all the pressure of knowing, crap, there's 30 seconds left in the period. We really need to keep this out. I know what you're going to say. That's what he's paid for.
Yeah.
He's paid to stop that puck.
He is.
Now, if the guy winds up and takes a slap shot from the blue line, and you see it all the way, but he's coming in, he's got a 4x6 to shoot at, and you've got to guess, is he going to deke? Is he going to shoot? Is he going to go glove side, stick side, through my legs? Where's he going to go? Is he going to crash right into me? Is he going to skate by? Is there going to be a rebound?
Dimitra was close enough to take away most of those options, and he did. The only thing he could have done was 5-hole or an easy read to the right. That's all he could have done.
I'm sorry, that's easy enough to say sitting in a chair a day later. During the game, it's moving so fast. I think that on a breakaway, the only thing you can do is react to what's happening on the breakaway.
Okay, fine.
And, I mean, calculating the physics of it, I just think that every goal scored on a breakaway is a legitimate goal.
Okay,
I'm not going to blame him for that. I will blame him, though. I will blame Luongo. Twice last night, he let in a soft wrist shot very soon after a legitimate goal.
Yes.
Those, I will say, Luongo was directly responsible for 2 of the 5 goals last night. The breakaway one, not one of them.
And games 3 and 4, 12 goals scored, 7 of them came off of rebounds.
Yes, rebound control was a problem for the first 4 games of the series.
Now, I know what you're going to say. You're going to say, where was the Canucks' defense getting to those rebounds?
And we look at Antti Niemi gave up a lot of rebounds, but every time there was a rebound, you saw a hawk there to swat it away. And there were no Canucks in the area. Now, part of that is the Canucks' problem, because those grit players were not very gritty.
No.
Right? There was nobody in the danger area. Ryan Kessler, without that shoulder injury, I guess, he's going to stand in front of that net, banging a few of those rebounds. Alex Burrows is supposed to be standing there, banging those in. Steve Bernier is supposed to be banging those, at least towards the net, if they don't go in.
Yeah.
Those are the guys who are supposed to be in there, getting dirty, and weren't. We need a couple of gritty players who are going to do that, score dirty goals.
Well, I think those two guys are those players when they're healthy.
I mean, Pavel Dimitra, not your guy.
No. Goodbye. See you later, Pavel.
Well, I mean, what else is there to say about it, Chris? The Canucks lost in dramatic fashion, in embarrassing fashion.
I wouldn't call it dramatic. I would, unless you're thinking dramatically bad.
Okay, how about in tragic?
Tragic.
They lost in tragic fashion, 2 years running, to the same team, with largely the same roster. Both years, goaltending by Roberto Luongo was questionable in the second round. I don't blame him as you do, but it was a question mark. Our defense was decimated by injury and poor performance. Even last night, Kevin Bieksa, who had an amazing game 5, he gave up the puck that ended up being the second goal last night.
Yes.
We really need to address that back end, because who knows, maybe Hamhuis isn't going to be available. What do we do?
It's so confusing to me, because every year for like the last 4 years, preseason, all the reports come out about who's got the best this and the best that. The Canucks always are listed as having one of the best top 6 in the NHL.
And, well, at the beginning of the season, yeah, we did. We had Matthew Schneider in the fold. We had a healthy Willie Mitchell, who would make a big difference.
Yeah.
We had a Sammy Salo with 2 testicles, for example.
Did you hear it last night from Sammy Salo?
What's that?
He was asked about his injury, and he said the general was fine, but the 1st Battalion was down.
That's very funny. And I'm sure that the leader of the troops, Mrs. Salo, was happy to hear that. The first lady was very happy.
Yeah.
That's a funny quote. Yeah, I mean, this is something we're going to deal with on a further podcast when we talk about who is actually signed for next year, who's available next year.
Yeah.
But the back end has a lot to answer for.
Now, I'm going to throw another angle at you. How do you feel about the Canucks coaching staff, specifically in regards to their special teams?
Well, okay, I've got to say, a lot of people seem to really dislike Alain Vigneault.
Yes. The reason for that, I think, is because of the way that he came to the Vancouver Canucks.
As a defensive specialist?
As a defensive specialist. You know, it was all about hard work, and then the offense will come.
And also doing things like holding Marcus Naslund back.
Yes, yeah.
Holding Todd Bertuzzi back.
Although, like I don't know where that holding Marcus Naslund back thing came from, because he put him with the Sedins for good portion of his first year.
But you've got to remember that Marcus Naslund is more of a guy who scores off the rush.
Yeah.
The Sedins are traditionally have not been. This year was the first year they've really been a threat on the rush. They're not built for a Marcus Naslund to be there. They need a banger. They need somebody dirty. Marcus Naslund's not dirty.
Let me throw a couple of...
Well, can I just...
Yeah,
I want to answer your question first. Okay, so Alain Vigneault, I don't have a problem with Alain Vigneault. I kind of like him, actually. I like his style in the interviews post-game. I like that he called out Luongo, called him the second best goaltender. And that's what made Luongo show up in Game 5. I think he can deal with that. The only thing I think is wrong with Alain Vigneault is that he allows players like Luongo and Dimitra to demand ice time because of their big contracts. I like that he sat Dimitra.
Mm-hmm.
And he should have sat Dimitra a long time ago.
So do you think that he needs to take more control over when and how much players play? Because let's face it, Sammy Salo, playing on one nut, should not have been in the game yesterday. He showed right from the get-go that he was having trouble keeping up with the Hawks.
Yeah. I mean, you could see him grimacing from the first shift out there.
There's always been criticism
now, what?
That Roberto Luongo plays too much, practices too much.
Now, what an amazing story for Salo to play.
Yes.
I mean, battalion general aside, just, I mean, the way that he's playing through that kind of injury, the same Kessler with a shoulder injury. Wow. I mean, amazing job, Ryan. Mm-hmm. That's really inspiring. Sam isn't bad back, bad groin, bad earlobe. Amazing. Super. The fact is, you got to sit down because you're not helping the team. Kessler did nothing now, in the second round.
Is that on the player or is that on the coach?
It's got to be a little of both. Sure, the player says, put me in, coach, I'm going to play. And NHL history is littered with stories of guys, you know, scoring goals on broken legs. There's a great story about Dave Tippett. He had dislocated his thumb on a play, and he asked the trainer to just put it back in place, and he scored on a penalty shot.
Yeah.
You know, like, there are great stories like that throughout NHL history.
O'Brien having the wound glued shut so that he could...
Yeah, there you go. And going back on the ice, and Ben Eager, you know, taking stitches out 2 seconds later. Those are great stories. But the fact is every year now, you know, a team is done and the Ottawa Senators say, oh yeah, Daniel Alfredson's been injured for the last 10 games. And we look at the stats and Alfredson didn't do anything in those 10 games. Well, if you're not producing, you're just holding the team back by being out there. Take a regular shift and do nothing? What would you rather do?
The problem with Kessler is that he wasn't doing nothing. It was the nature of his injury that he could still... skate like crazy.
But he was out of position because normally he's hitting people.
Yeah.
Normally he's taking guys out of the play. They were just skating around him.
Yeah.
He wasn't putting the puck on net. Burrows was ineffectual. Whatever was wrong with Burrows, whether it was physical or mental, I don't know. If Grabner comes up and he is totally ineffectual for a couple of games, he sits. If you get Hodgson come up next year and he's 10 games and he does nothing either way, he sits. So what, Pavel Dimitra comes up and he stinks for 20 games, you keep him in on a regular shift?
On the second line.
Right, and we're going to move Pavel Dimitra down to the fourth line. But he's still on the power play.
Yeah, I don't know what to say about the Canucks.
It was just a terrible, terrible series. I'm sorry, but if... you're going to say that injuries are a problem. Is there any team that's healthy right now? If the Chicago Blackhawks were knocked out, do you think we wouldn't hear so-and-so is playing with a shoulder injury?
No.
So-and-so is playing with a hip injury? Every single team is banged up right now.
I believe that the Montreal Canadiens have forced a Game 7 without one Hal Gill in the lineup. So
Philadelphia.
Yeah.
Okay, now mind you, they were down 3-0 to Boston. They also came back and won 2 games.
Yeah.
Brian Boucher, their goaltender, gone. Strained MCL in both legs.
And Leighton comes in and closes the shutout.
So I'm sorry, but a few injuries on the team, it just sounds like an excuse.
Yeah, but
it really does.
It does, and yet with the Canucks, when they were all healthy, they were a fun team to watch, and they were a world-class team.
Sure. So what's the question then? Mike Gillis needs to shore up the depth.
Yeah.
We have 6 good defensemen only.
Mm-hmm.
And they were willing to put Sammy Salo on one ball rather than put in
Lawrence Nicolet. Yeah.
I mean, is it that Nicolet is a bad player? He hasn't played poorly when he was here. Were they trying to inspire the troops by putting this guy out there?
Maybe. It seems like a valid response to what happened. But
was there anything more stirring than that first period crowd chanting, balls of steel, balls of steel?
No.
That's pretty good stuff. I mean, that's great stuff. But the defense was so beat up that Chicago did what they wanted in our building.
Yeah, and they took it to the defense. Like, after Buffalo knocked out Edler late in the first.
In game 6?
In game 6, yeah, sorry. After Edler went down, they were hitting everything on the back end.
And that's what, again, whether it's injuries or anything else, the Canucks were not making the Chicago back end pay.
No.
The only guys who were hitting were Bernier and Wellwood. Wellwood's so small that, frankly, the Chicago defense didn't even feel it when he hit him.
Yeah. Here's my concern. If you were looking at the game statistically, the Canucks, going into the last game, had outscored Chicago 5-on-5. They were losing the series because of special teams.
Yes.
You look at the penalty kill. I don't know if it's Vigneault that's responsible for the penalty
kill.
That's
Ryan Walter.
He's delegated it to Ryan Walter.
Ryan Walter is the special teams coach.
The Canucks, going into last game, had a worse penalty kill than the Columbus Blue Jackets did last year. And Columbus set the record for the worst playoff penalty kill ever.
Wow. during the regular season, of the 8 teams in the conference semifinals, the other 7 teams were all in the top 12 of the NHL this year. Vancouver was 18th. That's 18th out of 30 teams, and that includes non-teams like Toronto and Edmonton. These guys were atrocious.
Yeah.
The Canucks were 18th out of 30.
Yes. If you were going to play the style that the Canucks wanted to play this year, which was basically high-flying offensive with a goaltender who could make the saves that you wanted him to make, you've got to have two things. A goaltender that can actually make those saves. And Roberto Luongo was not that goaltender for a good portion of this year, and especially in the playoffs.
Not on a consistent basis.
No. They also need a penalty kill that doesn't suck.
That's two things. Rebound control. Yeah. A lot of those power play goals are rebounds. But also, guys who can clear the net. Guys who can either clear a player out of the way. The only guy that has the size to do it on the Canucks right now is Andrew Alberts, and he's just not good enough.
I don't know why you need to clear the net. Roberto Luongo is one of the best goaltenders in the league at seeing around a body.
Not in this playoff, he hasn't.
Well, he wasn't, but that they were also paying so much attention to Dustin Byfuglien or whoever was in front of the net for Chicago that he was trying to see around two people, not just one. Maybe I don't understand the game well enough, but I don't see the problem with playing puck pressure on the power play with four guys covering a man and leaving Luongo, who's a world-class goalie who can see around people in front of the net, to just deal with the one guy who's still there.
That sounds pretty reasonable to me. I don't think that's not understanding the game. I think that's good penalty kill. And when the Canucks are successful, when you look at Montreal in these playoffs, when they were successful against Washington's power play, it was because they pressured the puck. I mean, in that first game against Pittsburgh, Montreal gave up 4-for-4 on the power play, yeah. And that's because they sat back and let Sidney Crosby direct traffic. And it's when they pressured the puck in these other games since then that they've had success. But you know, Chris, we could go on for a very long time about this, and no doubt
we will.
Team 1040 and Sportsnet and TSN, Metro 24 and the province and everybody who reads and listens to those things are going to for the whole summer.
No, TSN, they're already into Toronto Maple Leafs off-season mode. But
true enough. The fact is, the Canucks gave an almost identical performance to what they did last year, and last year was not good enough.
You know, the second round is no longer going to be acceptable for fans in this market.
When I was a kid, the Vancouver Canucks were atrocious every year. And Vancouver fans, you guys who are a little bit older out there know this. Vancouver fans actually had two teams. We had the regular season team and we all had a Canucks jersey. And then we had our playoff team and we cheered for them in the playoffs because the Canucks just didn't make the playoffs.
Yeah, and if they did make the playoffs, then it was just a big party.
It was gravy. Everything they did was gravy. And when they came home losers, we were like, yay, good job, Stan Smeal. You worked so hard. We love you, man. Can you think of anybody in the league whose jersey was retired who has lower numbers than Stan Smeal?
No, I can't.
Now, I love Stan Smeal. Stan Smeal is steamer, right? This is the guy who inspired Trevor Linden. I mean, how can you say anything bad about the guy? He was a lunch bucket greasy guy.
Looked like a lunch bucket.
But he looked a little bit like a lunch bucket. And he still does today. But this is a guy who could not skate worth a damn.
Yeah.
Who had to work hard for every point he got. When he succeeded, even a little, we were so happy.
Yeah, and we don't have that.
Now, every year, especially with Luongo in net, we look at that team and we think, holy crap, we could win it all, man.
Yeah.
We have a team that's good enough to win. And when they don't even try hard, when they don't put their best effort on the ice, that's what kills me. I would rather have a mediocre team that plays at 130%. I would rather have that team that's playing over their head, that every game leaves everything on the ice, than have a team with a Hart Trophy winner and a whole bunch of players that are selling jerseys around the league who honestly don't put their best game on the ice.
I don't know that that's an entirely fair criticism of some of the underperforming Canucks. I think the Sedins are getting a lot of criticism. And I don't really blame the Sedins for their production this postseason. They were once again above a point a game pace.
More than a point a game. Mostly scored in the first series.
Mostly scored in the first series. But here's the thing. In the Chicago series, the Canucks, because they were so unable to generate secondary offense on a consistent basis, were allowing Joel Quenneville to get his matchups against the Sedins.
Agreed. And even in game six, when Quenneville started with the bowling line on the ice,
yeah,
Vigneault just said, okay, here's the Sedins. It gave him exactly what Quenneville wanted.
So what do you do? Show me two players on the same line in the National Hockey League that are going to have a huge series against the likes of Duncan Keith and Brent Seabrook. I don't think they exist.
I don't really know what I can base this on, because I've been thinking that Joe Thornton and Patrick Marleau were going to do some really good things for a long time. And they only scored, what, 5 points in the last couple of games.
Yeah.
But it was enough to beat Detroit. Pavelski disappeared. Thornton and Marleau stepped up and won the series in the last couple of games. And here's the difference between the Sharks and the Canucks this year. The Sharks took out Detroit in close games. Mm-hmm. They played hard every game except one. They're showing up on a nightly basis. Even on nights when they lose, even on nights when Thornton is, he's in the crease, banging and crashing, and he's getting close.
Here's the difference that I see between the Sharks and the Canucks is that Joe Thornton deserves the doesn't show up in the playoffs moniker that he's received. I don't think the Sedins do. I think they show up, and I think they get
they don't have a
shut
supporting
down game because of the other Canucks players that don't show up. And there's no excuse this year. Last year, the Sedins were pretty much it. This year, we had more 20-goal scorers on this team, I think, than any other team except maybe Washington. We're the second highest scoring team in the league. The Canucks didn't support the Sedins. And they had the capability to do so this year, whereas in previous years they haven't.
And certainly, you look at the goals that the Canucks scored, even in Game 5, 3 out of those 4 goals came from the defense.
Yeah.
The only goal we scored in the last game came from Shane O'Brien jumping up in the play.
Yeah.
Our secondary scoring didn't exist. Didn't exist. So, looking forward, we're going to talk about what happens next for the Canucks next podcast. We're going to look at Cap Geek's numbers. We've talked about it for a little while. We're going to have time to do it now that the Canucks are out.
Plenty of time.
Lots of time, all summer.
For
free agency starts on July 1st, Canada Day. We're certainly going to have something to talk about, looking at quite a few guys who are available.
Mm-hmm.
You know, did you know that we had a look at Michael Camilleri last year?
Did we?
Didn't get him?
No.
He's looking pretty good in Montreal right now.
You know what? The Canucks don't need more offense. They need more depth on defense, and they need their players to show up in key times.
I don't know. I'd be pretty happy with Michael Camilleri in a Canucks uniform.
Hey, at the expense of not being able to shore up the defense?
And what did Montreal give up for him to get him from Calgary?
Well, they didn't give up anything.
Ha ha ha! There you go. It wouldn't have been at the expense of anything.
Okay, they gave up $6 million in cap space. That's what they gave up.
Here's the beauty. $4 million of cap space is gone as soon as Pavel Dimitra gets on the plane. Okay, very, very quickly, who do you think wins? The Sharks or the Blackhawks? I've got San Jose in 5.
Really? No, I'm taking Chicago in 7.
Long series.
Yeah.
You think a long series, you think the Hawks are still going to have the gas?
Yeah.
All right.
Bunch of kids. What's their oldest player on there, like 22?
12, I think. By the way, even though the Canucks lost, I still say someone has got to trim the mullet. Patrick Kane looks ridiculous.
You know what? Ridiculous looks good on Patrick Kane.
If that guy hoists a cup with that embarrassing piece of roadkill on the back of his head, there is something serious. I mean, think about this. The cup is going to go from Patrick Kane and his ugly mullet to Brent Sopel and his ugly mug. Can you believe that? And I've got to say one more thing. Dustin Byfuglien, my goodness, do we hate you, but we would love to have you on our team. If you ever want to play for Vancouver, there's an open invitation for you to stand in the other team's crease for us.
Now before we go, I just want to get you to put something on air that you said to me off air just last night, actually.
I might admit to this.
You said that if the Canucks re-sign Pavel Dimitra, that you would jump off the bandwagon.
I will definitely say that right here, right now. Mike Gillis, if you're listening, if you re-sign Pavel Dimitra, even if you sign him to a janitorial contract, I don't care what you sign him to. If you sign Pavel Dimitra, I will renounce my Canuck fandom.
He's not even allowed to sell popcorn in the stands.
He cannot sell 50-50 tickets at the game. I said the same thing about Dan Colucci after the lockout. I refused to attend a Canucks game, even as a volunteer for Canuck Place, as long as Dan Colucci was in a Canuck uniform, and I stood by it. I thought he was the reason for the team's loss against the Red Wings and several other times. When we had a strong core and an exciting team with Jovanovski and Naslin and Bertuzzi all at the top of their game,
yeah.
Dan Colucci was the reason we lost. And I said it. I said, Berkey, if you're going to keep Dan Colucci, you lost this fan. And I'm saying it again. He's not the only reason for this year's loss, but Pavel Dimitra has got to go.
On that note, Jason, it's been a fantastic season. I'm looking forward to doing this podcast with you again all of next year. And, of course, we're going to be here a few times during the summer just to keep you guys abreast.
The Canucks Nameless podcast is looking for a name. Please go to CanucksCorner.com and vote or just suggest for what you think should be the name of this podcast. Once again, that's CanucksCorner.com. CanucksCorner.com has done some great things over the last 14 years. Brian Warishin, great guy, super guy. He's the one who does all the stuff for the tweet-ups and gets prizes for you folks. For the moment, anyway, you can find me on Twitter at TrimTheMullet. You can find Chris on Twitter at...
Chris_Withers. That's Withers with one H.
Once again, go to CanucksCorner.com. Thank you, Brian, for letting us pontificate on your website. And thank you, Vancouver Canucks, for giving us something to talk about. Bernier is no longer a turd, as you said earlier. What?
It's all too